Hello everyone. Thank you for listening in on what I hope is going to be an interesting and useful interview in the current world that we're now all adapting to. My name's Kirsty Giles and I'm a project manager at the Scottish Violence Reduction Unit. And today I'm joined by a fantastic human and a great friend who works really hard in an area of expertise that we at the Violence Reduction Unit believe to be crucial. That we are discussing in given the current COVID-19 pandemic and the very recent lockdown that we're all deploying. We're going to talk today about domestic abuse. I'd like to thank Jen for joining me. Throughout today's interview, we're going to cover the organisation Jen works for, Safe Lives. We're going to cover the definition of domestic abuse and what particular challenges people that are living in domestic abuse just now face during these unprecedented times. And crucially, we're going to talk about where people can go or signpost others that they know that are living under this kind of abuse during these really difficult times in lockdown and in isolation. So first of all, Jen, can you tell me a wee bit about what Safe Lives does?
Hi Kirsty, thank you for having me along to chat today about domestic abuse and the implications around the pandemic that we're all currently experiencing. So a wee bit about Safe Lives. We are a national domestic abuse charity, and what we aim to do is support people who work frontline and also those who make decisions around domestic abuse policy and procedures. And we use data and research and frontline expertise to help services work with survivors and also influence policymakers as well. And what that can look like is that can be training or it can be projects like my own where we look at survivor journey for people who have experienced domestic abuse but may also have intersecting needs. For example, mental health or learning disability, that sort of stuff. One of the key things that we do is we want to ensure that there's a real survivor voice through everything that we do. So we make sure that we work alongside people that have lived experience of domestic abuse. And also we want to change that, kind of that rhetoric about why doesn't she leave to actually why doesn't the perpetrator stop, which I think is dead important. So yeah, so that's what we do.
Thanks, Jen, for that. And it's great to know that you work nationally as well. So can I ask you, under your role and under Safe Lives, how do you define domestic abuse in the sort of new terminology coming out about coercive control?
In Safe Lives in Scotland, we would use the definition that is set down by the Scottish Government, and it's widely used all throughout Scotland. So that's including, local authorities and our third sector partners as well. And that is that domestic abuse is gender-based violence, can be perpetrated by partners or ex-partners, and can include a wide range of behaviours, including the physical stuff that we often think about around domestic abuse. So that can be assaults and physical attacks involving, weapons or body parts, but also sexual abuse and mental and emotional abuse. And that's probably what people are thinking about when we talk about coercive control, which is a real specific type of abuse that's involving reducing someone's space for action, so controlling and limiting what they're able to do and how they're able to behave. Things such as emotional abuse and economic abuse are also coming into the forefront as well. And it can be partners and ex-partners, and it can be perpetrated by anyone, but we recognise that the majority of victims of domestic abuse will overwhelmingly be women.
Thanks for that, Jen. It's really helpful for myself and for listeners to hear the different types of domestic abuse. The next question is just round about that, Jen. Given currently what's happening in our lockdown situation and with the big pandemic, COVID-19, how do you think that people's experiences of domestic abuse will change, given what we're experiencing currently and because we're in a lockdown situation?
I think what we need to remember is that if you've experienced domestic abuse or you're currently experiencing it, that you will know what it's like being isolated and frightened. This is another level of complexity to that. For people who live with their perpetrators, one of the biggest things is that there'll be a lack of space for respite. So you may have managed to get out to work, or the perpetrator went to work and that gave you a little bit of time away from the abuse. or you may have, you know, had errands to run or caring responsibilities or anything, like, you know, taking the kids to school or whatever, and that will have gone and that's changed quite dramatically. So there's more time spent with the perpetrator and less access to any kind of respite, which is always really important. If you also had support, say potentially from social work or a support worker or anything like that, then how that looks will have changed as well. So they may not be able to come to the home, or they may not be able to support you in the normal ways. And I know that services are doing some amazing work to work around the limitations of what, you know, telephone calls and emails and things can be. So I have to say that it's people are really, really doing their best, but for some survivors it might be difficult if they don't have that kind of face-to-face contact or whatever. For perpetrators who don't live with the family, or potentially, you know, they've left, or there's a breakup, that can be also equally scary, because they can use the isolation and the fact that they'll know where you are at all times because you'll be in the home, to really ramp up the level of control and fear and things that they'll do, those actions they take. There's also something around the kind of context around the isolation itself. So we know, for example, and I think everyone's real clear on this, is that domestic abuse isn't caused by alcohol, it's not caused by drugs or, you know, kind of financial difficulties. It can be exacerbated by that, so that can make it more risky. However, you know, domestic abuse is about a perpetrator's decision to abuse their family, so that can also be difficult, because there might be a lack of money coming into the home due to working arrangements. There could be lack of access to alcohol or potential withdrawals or whatever, so that all increases the risk quite dramatically. So survivors and victims of domestic abuse have become experts in their own life at managing risk, and this has just tipped it slightly, and they're going to have to find ways to work to try and ensure their safety. But as we know, you can't control anyone else's behaviour, you know, it's only your reaction to it, and that's incredibly difficult, particularly alongside this, when you're managing all the stuff around the fact that we are locked down anyway without, you know, people that are experiencing domestic abuse. So yeah, it's completely different and a lot more riskier.
Thanks so much for that, Jane. It's so interesting to hear, and there's lots of things there that I hadn't thought about, and I'm sure some of the listeners wouldn't have thought about either. It makes a really complex and dangerous situation even harder. And thinking about that, with Safe Lives in mind and other organisations that are specialists in this area, where can people go right now for help for themselves, or even to direct anyone that they're worried about, that they would like to seek help at this time, given the situation that we're in? Is there places in particular is support still available, and can people leave, I guess, with this idea of lockdown, if people are ready to leave and feel like that's the answer for them, is that still a possibility?
One of the first things that, you know, I want to reiterate is that if anyone's experiencing domestic abuse, or you're concerned about, you know, a friend or family member or a neighbour perhaps, then you are allowed to contact the police. That hasn't changed due to COVID-19, so they will still respond in the way that they have done before. And I think for some people, or certainly some abusers, they would maybe play on the knowledge that they wrongly believed that people wouldn't be able to enter their home or whatever, and that's not the case at all. So I think that's really key. When it comes to safety planning, perpetrators of domestic abuse ensure that they abuse in a really particular way to their, you know, the family or the partner that they're abusing. So generic safety planning advice might not apply to, you know, each individual. However, there's some things that I would definitely consider. So if you're looking for support, you can speak to family and friends or neighbours, if it's safe to do so, which is the really key thing here. So can you FaceTime somebody you trust, or can you set up a time that maybe somebody can check in with you? Potentially, if you're allowed to go out on, you know, you can, if you're able to go out and pick up groceries or do some exercise, that could be used as a time to engage with someone just to check in with you or let them know what's happening. So again, it really just depends on your particular circumstances. What I would say is that all the agencies that support those experiencing domestic abuse are still operational. They're just having to adapt what they're doing. And from my experience so far in the past few weeks, when speaking to colleagues that are working frontline, is that they are doing it in really innovative and different ways. So please don't think that there is nothing out there for you because of the pandemic. People are still finding a way to support. So I think that's just really key. In terms of other kind of safety plan and stuff, again, you know, if it's safe to do so, you can go online. There's lots of agencies have put up their own safety plan advice. At Safe Lives, we have a website for survivors and professionals that's on the front page that you can click on, and that'll give you some information about generic safety planning and also accessing online support as well. So just, you know, the things are there, but you have to make sure that it's really safe to do so. If you've got kind of contact with agencies, say for example social work or whatever, then it could be a chance to speak to them about this and work out a safety plan with them, if that's something that's applicable. And also thinking about just the home itself, if you have to leave in an emergency, then think about the safest places to do that. So for example, if the kitchen has a back door that's easier to reach than the front door with gates or whatever, then that might be something. But you might also have to be aware that there's potentially more weapons in a kitchen. So things like this. Again, people are the experts in their own life. So, you know, if you've been living with domestic abuse, you'll be constantly safety planning and risk assessing. So things like that. It could be that even, you know, you have a code word or signal with neighbours if, you know, you're in danger. So lots of things. But I think the key thing is that there is still support out there and people want to help as well. And I think that particularly with, you know, kind of the funding that's came out that Nicola Sturgeon announced, and the fact that there's so many campaigns about telling folk that actually we talk about being safe at home and stay safe at home, but that might not be the case for everybody. So yeah, what I would definitely want to say is that there's help out there, and access it if it's safe to do so.
Thanks so much for all that great information, Jen. It's so helpful for us to be able to share this kind of information and get that message out there, that the support organisations are absolutely still running, and people still want to help anybody that's living under these kind of conditions. Just got one last question before I reiterate the places that people can go to for help. What one thing, Jen, would you want anybody who's listening that is living under domestic abuse and coercive control, what one thing would you want them to hear?
Thanks, Kirsty. Obviously, we can't cover every single scenario when it comes to domestic abuse, but hopefully that's a wee start of our 10 to start thinking about how we can support people, or, you know, how people can access support. The one thing that I would tell any survivor of domestic abuse, or anyone that's experiencing domestic abuse, that this is not your fault and that you are believed. For me, that's the absolute key.
Thanks so much, Jen, for the time that you've taken to speak to me today. I'm just going to reiterate some of the things and the places that Jen mentioned about to seek help or send someone that you think would be living in that circumstance of domestic abuse to get help. It was the police, obviously, still going to respond in the same way that they always have done. So please don't feel afraid or worried about the police not responding. Jen had talked about family, friends or neighbours that are safe to contact and be in touch with. Always thinking about someone that you trust. Was when you do have an opportunity to be out shopping or doing your exercise, it could be an opportunity to reach out again if it's safe to do so. Another big message was all agencies are operational still during this COVID-19 crisis. Jen mentioned the Safe Lives website, so quite a lot of online support. That can be found at www.safelives.org.uk. And again, mentioned things like social work, so making sure that if you feel you can and it's safe enough to do so, to reach out to these agencies. Well, I love the idea of a code word for neighbours. I think during this crisis, it seems like a really important and useful thing to be thinking about. And thanks again to Jane, who's just been fantastic today, and I think will continue, and already does obviously help with this absolutely crucial work around looking after people. Thanks, Jen.